Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Her Half of History, an Evergreen podcast. My name is Lori. I am currently swimming in books on strong women for the upcoming series on Last Queens, but in the meantime, February is Black History Month. To celebrate, I am bringing you an episode from another podcast that you should know about, the fabulously named Dead Ladies Show. The Dead Ladies Show celebrates women, both overlooked and iconic, through live history storytelling on stage in Berlin and beyond. Host and producer Susan Stone and Dead Ladies Show co-founders Katie Darbyshire and Florian Dawsons bring you fascinating dead ladies from around the world, from ancient mathematician Hypatia to modern architect Zaha Hadid. The Dead Ladies Show podcast's seventh season starts next month in March. This is an archive episode from them about pioneering R&B singer Laverne Baker.
Welcome to the Dead Lady Show podcast. I'm Susan Stone. The Dead Lady Show celebrates women who achieved impressive things against all odds while they were alive. The show is recorded in front of a delightful audience in Berlin and beyond, and here on the podcast, we bring you a special sampling from these events. Dead Lady Show co-founder Florian Dawsons is here with me today. Hey there.
Hi, Susan. So glad to be here.
Welcome to episode 25.
What?
Right, we made it. We made it. And this is also kicking off our third season. Three, it's the magic number with this episode, and we have a story told by our dear co-founder, other co-founder, Katie Darbyshire.
Yes, and Katie, as you might know, is a translator. As you might not know, she's a very avid and skilled blues dancer. Mm-hmm. She's the publisher of her imprint called V&Q Books, which publishes remarkable writing from Germany into English.
Now, that last fact is fantastic, but I want to talk a little bit about the other part, about the blues dancing. And the reason why is this talk is what I call a command performance, because I commanded her to redo it, more or less. And because Katie told the story at our second ever live show back in 2015, what a fabulous show it was.
Yeah, I remember. It was like it was yesterday.
And it was not. So long ago. And it is about pioneering R&B singer Laverne Baker. This seemed like a perfect fit for Katie to retell Laverne's story to her blues dancing companions at a session in Berlin's März. And now we're going to share it with you. Here's Katie.
Hello. Okay. There's a little interruption to the dancing, about 20 minutes, while I show you this thing. Pull up a chair. You can come closer if you like, but you don't have to. There's no audience participation, and I'm probably not going to spit very much. So, I have everything set up. Here's my little altar here. My picture usually lives in my front room on the top of the shelf. This is Laverne Baker. She was an R&B singer. She's remembered from the very early days of what became known as rock and roll, but actually her career began and ended with the blues. She was a great performer with amazing charisma and a great sense of humor. She was probably, we're not quite sure, born Dolores Laverne Baker in Chicago in 1929. She hinted in an interview that her father may have been a gangster. We're not sure about that. But we do know that his sister, her father's sister, her auntie, is this woman on the left, Merline Johnson, who was a blues singer. And I don't know if you recognize this woman on the right. This is Memphis Minnie, a more famous blues singer who she was distantly related to. If you read her, if you read things, sometimes they say she was her aunt, but she wasn't. Certainly both of these women were huge role models for Laverne. She started singing, guess where, at church. And at the age of 10, she won her first amateur club contest, jitterbugging. on stage with a friend, and then they said, can you do anything else? And she went on to sing. And they gave her a job at the age of 10 at this club. Working on the weekends, she earned $5 a night. When the police came around, she would just hide. She made her first recording for RCA Records at, she said, 12, 13, or 14. She couldn't quite remember. Her first official billing, though, was at the Club Delisa in Chicago. Here it is. They look like they're having fun. This is in 1942. Laverne's first official billing was in 1947 when she was 17. She was on the bill as Little Miss Sharecropper. Hideous name. There, you can't really see because it's a tiny photo blown up really big. But she used to go on stage in pigtails and these tattered overalls, and she was kind of copying another artist. Being precocious, she got married at 18 to this post office worker called Eugene Williams and got divorced 2 years later. Yes. By 1950, though, she was headlining at Chicago clubs, became a local star. She was billed as the Empress of the Blues, which is what Bessie Smith had been known as, and her aunt Merline was billed as the Queen of the Blues, so they would occasionally appear together. Laverne moved on to Detroit, where she started playing for racially mixed audiences, and she changed, thank goodness, she changed her stage name in 1952. To her manager, she said, I don't like this Little Miss Sharecropper thing. I want to wear pretty gowns and stuff like that. Also in 1952, she had her first TV appearances and played at Alan Freed's first R&B contest. I'm going to show you Alan Freed. There you go. As you can see, he was a white radio DJ, and this is the man who invented the term rock and roll for what was essentially rhythm and blues. He championed the music and promoted it to white audiences. He gave it that new name, and suddenly it was in fashion. In 1953, Laverne moved to New York and signed to Atlantic Records. She was earning apparently $300 a week by this point. She said she had a really great press man, so I don't know if we can believe how much she was earning. Every time it says in the press, you have to take it with a pinch of salt, I think. Fairly soon she went on tour in Europe, but she got a call from her manager saying, come home, you've got a hit record. And here it is, Soul on Fire. And if you could, oh yes, you can read it, because it says very large now, Baker Jamel. So she co-wrote her first hit. It's a beautiful song. You can listen to it. It's velvety and sensuous. It really uses her voice. And it was followed very quickly by her next smash hit, Tweedly Dee, in 1954. Remember that name. Tweedly Dee, as you can imagine, was much tamer than Soul on Fire, but it was suitable for the radio, and it became what was called the first major rock and roll hit. It also became one of her signature songs. Here you can see she's billed as Laverne Baker, the Tweedly Dee girl herself. What a name. And there followed a string of twee hits with innocuous lyrics. Basically, they were written to get teenagers to put money in jukeboxes. And they worked. Teenagers had money for the first time in the 50s. But Laverne was a sexy black woman wearing tight dresses with this suggestive stage presence. She used to actually get people very worked up. One time she was playing in Brooklyn, and this fan came on stage screaming and bit into her hand. And Laverne carried on playing with this man, like hanging by the teeth from her hand. I'm going to show you a little video, I hope it works, of her in 1957. So you can see what I'm talking about, that presence that she has. You can see that she's working with her body and her face.
We'll keep spinning those rock and roll hits like this one coming up right now. Laverne Baker with Love Me Right in the Morning.
I think when she was singing that song, Love Me Right in the Morning, she was thinking something else to those teenagers. Anyway, I don't know. Here you can see I've put up the sheet music to that second hit, Tweedly Dee. And this is clearly not Laverne on the photo. because this is the first baddie of the story. This is Georgia Gibbs, who very swiftly covered that record using exactly the same musicians and the exact same arrangement. Yes, the thing is, the white radio stations weren't playing Laverne's version until recently. American R&B charts registered sales to black customers. They were originally called the race charts. And the pop charts registered sales to white customers. And Laverne's version didn't enter the pop charts for airplay, but it did get to number 14 on the jukebox charts, which I guess is like the SoundCloud charts. What would that be? iTunes charts? I don't know. And number 22 on record sales, huh? Okay. Georgia Gibbs' version got to number 3 on the jukebox, number 3 on record sales, and number 2 on airplay. And it stayed in the charts for 19 weeks. Laverne Baker estimated she lost $15,000 on that one record alone to Gibbs. Gibbs also, more fool her, covered the rather dull song Tra La La in 1956, which was stupid because it was the flip side to Jim Dandy, which became another of Laverne's signature tunes and got to number 1 on the R&B charts and number 17 on the pop charts. So, ha. Anyway, still, Baker wrote to her congressman to protest, and the law was eventually changed so that arrangement, you can't do the same arrangement anymore. You have to pay if you do. When she was boarding a plane to Australia in 1957, Laverne made Gibbs the beneficiary of her life insurance policy. If she died, she said, Gibbs would have no one left to copy. So, she was famous, though. Here she is being famous. She had, and famous and fabulous, yeah, she had a versatile voice. It was strong and sexy, and she knew how to growl. But she and Atlantic Records both wanted to make a good living. So a lot of her hits were quite simple, especially to begin with, and didn't show off her ability. She did have about 30 of them, though, from 1955 to the early 60s. She was a star. She appeared in Alan Freed's incredibly bad film, Rock, 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 exclamation mark, in 1956. I watched it, so you don't have to. Don't. And in 1957, in Mr. Rock and Roll, which is what that clip was from. Here's the film poster. You can see she's got fairly high billing in the poster. I don't know if anybody's seen Hairspray. It's kind of based around these awful, awful films, but much better. She made TV appearances. She sang duets with Benny King before he was famous, Jimmy Ricks, Jackie Wilson. We'll come to him later. She made 8 albums, which is a sign of how successful she was, because people, most singers weren't even making albums in those days. And those albums included gospel songs and Bessie Smith covers. They showed a really much more mature side to her and, of course, her love of blues. Here comes the cover. It's a little bit racy for 1958. Basically, she's wearing nothing at all apart from red lipstick. She said, if we do this Bessie Smith album, I have to do it my way. And the sleeve notes say, the surprising thing is that she attacks some of these tunes as a young Bessie might, with a strong beat and a feeling of great solidity in the melodic line. Not an attempt to sound like Bessie, but because she feels the lyrics and the songs. Not only are Bessie's songs interpreted with freshness and originality, in devoting herself to this task, Laverne has done something completely new, different stylistically from her previous work. Now you can tell that these notes were written by the conductor, because then it says, backing her is jazz with a jolt. Every instrument in fine form, every instrumentalist, an outstanding contemporary jazz artist. Most of her work, though, was live performance. She toured in package shows like this one that you can see the poster for. That's Clyde McFatter over there, and I've forgotten who the other guy is. Oh, that's Sam Cooke up in the top left. I don't know who these other people are. I can't read the writing. It's too small. From 1957, as you can see, those shows were racially integrated. So she was singing duets with white men, which hadn't really been done on stage before. In the South, though, the audiences were still segregated. There would be a rope down the middle of the auditorium with white kids on one side and black kids on the other. The black artists weren't allowed to buy food in the same places or use the same toilets or stay in the same hotels as the white artists. There were riots before the show in Montgomery, Alabama, and the whole thing was mentally and physically exhausting. I think she was on tour for 85 days in a row one time. We're coming to baddie number two. I'm not going to show him. I'm showing you the fur coat that he bought her instead. In 1959, Laverne Baker married the comedian Melvin Slappy White, who started out as Dinah Washington's chauffeur. Can I give you all a piece of advice? Don't marry someone whose name is Slappy. You'd think it would be a clue, right?
Yeah.
Right? You're like, Slappy, I love you, let's get... No. Let me read you what it says here. It says, clad in mink coats, valued at a total of $15,000, singers Dinah Washington and Laverne Baker teamed to belt out a tune in a Chicago bistro. Miss Washington's coat was a Christmas present from admirer. Miss Baker's was a gift from comic Slappy White. So he gave her this mink coat and she married him. The announcement said, the bride was attired in a tan tweed suit, mink coat with matching hat, at least he got her a hat, right? Tan shoes and accessories. Yeah, it didn't last all that long. Second husband, it was a second husband, after the divorce at age 20, right? So from the early 60s, Laverne aimed to play prestigious venues as an all-rounder, like Dinah Washington, who we just saw, or Sammy Davis Jr. And she did get solo shows in nightclubs from then, from 1961 on. She supported Louis Armstrong and had her own shows as well. She did a lot of ballads and torch songs, but it was hard for her to shake her old image. She was great on stage. She copied a lot of the patter and jokes from Slappy. At least there was something that he left her. But from the mid-60s, her star was fading while Slappy's career peaked in a performance at the White House, and Aretha Franklin became the star at Atlantic. Still, she played a lot for servicemen. She went to Vietnam during the war in 1970 and went on an independent tour of army bases. While she was there, she fell ill with pneumonia, but she went on touring, such a professional. She went on to Thailand and Hong Kong, where she was rushed to hospital, of course, on the closing night. Rumor has it that Slappy filed for divorce at that point. Way to hit a girl when she's down, huh? To slow down, Laverne moved to the Philippines, as you do. She started off paying shows at hotels and army bases, and then she became the entertainment manager at the Marine Staff NCO Club in Subic Bay in the Philippines. I couldn't find a photo, but there's a U.S. Naval Station brochure that says, this is a small club which really swings. It is located behind the station dispensary. I did find a lot of photos of Marines on leave in the Philippines. Here's my favorite one. They're having fun. Another handout warns about venereal disease in the town and says, don't jeopardize your future liberty and the health of your shipmates by exhibiting too much zeal while on liberty. Yeah, it's beautiful. Everyone looks happy. So you can imagine it's a kind of a crazy place. And Laverne stayed there for over 20 years. She was running this little club on the naval base. She sang every Friday and Saturday night. She sang all sorts of things. She was particularly fond of Neil Diamond, apparently. She didn't sing the blues because she was playing with, she was singing with Filipino musicians. And she said, you know, they just couldn't play the blues. They didn't have the notes. They couldn't, if they didn't have the notes, they couldn't play it. So 20 years without blues, but she was proud to have carried on performing and not gone into some menial job. She learned the language in the Philippines, Tagalog. She reared 4 dogs and 4 children. Her own daughter, Alana White, born in 1978. I don't know who the father was. An adopted daughter and a boy and girl left with her by their father who never came back for them. Now, my dream, one day if I have time to research it, is to write a TV series that will be like a combination between MASH and Glee, set on this naval base with Laverne as the star. So you get a different fancy number every time. I have to change some of the facts so that there can be blues in it, but hey. After 20 years, people were like, where is Laverne Baker, actually? And they tracked her down. And in 1988, she returned to the States for the first time to perform at the Madison Square Garden for Atlantic Records' 40th anniversary. And then they invited her back to the U.S. to star in a musical revue called Black and Blue on Broadway in 1990. Here's the poster. It was set in Paris between the wars. It was about black singers in Paris. She took over the role from Ruth Brown. And then she stayed in America, playing in Hollywood and making a couple of recordings for soundtracks, one of those Madonna films, and Shag. I don't know if anyone remembers Shag. I do. She made another album. She was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1991, the second female solo artist ever after Aretha Franklin. Slappy sent a telegram. She didn't respond. I wouldn't either. In 1992, she went to the UK, where I am from, so that's exciting for me. There's an article in the Independent newspaper where Martin Kellner describes her as a small, bespectacled lady in a funny, floppy hat fumbling in her handbag for her pills. But should doubts remain as to Laverne's rock and roll credentials, they are dispelled by the gig. In Barney Hoskins' book, From a Whisper to a Scream, Laverne Baker is bracketed with Etta James, Bessie Smith, and others as an earth mama whose business is tearing up clubs or churches. The good news is Laverne tore with a passion at Club 051 and didn't finish tearing until 2:40 in the morning. She was living in New York City on 10th Avenue. She was really into TV, her cat, and kickboxing movies. In 1994, she lost both legs to diabetes, carried on performing in a wheelchair. This is her at the Porretta Soul Festival in Italy in 1995. I feel good, she said. The only thing now is that I've got to find a man that's short. And I said, I have to quit drink to that. The LA Times wrote that she had reclaimed her old role as grand interpreter of Good Times and Wicked Love. Laverne Baker died in 1997 of cardiovascular disease. She was 67. There was a memorial service with all sorts of R&B greats. They tracked down her daughter and flew her in. She was buried initially in an unmarked plot, but a fundraiser organized a headstone later. And apparently that memorial service, there were a lot of jokes told that were actually not suitable for a place of worship. She had a bawdy sense of humor, and to remember her, I'm going to suggest you all go home later and look up the song Think Twice Version X. Does anybody know that? Okay, you're in for a surprise. Think Twice Version X is a duet with Jackie Wilson from 1965. You should, because even by blues standards, it is one of the rudest songs ever recorded. It's a really disgraceful song. I love it very much. But to finish off, I'm going to show you Laverne in 1988 doing one of my favorites, which is a song written for her by Leiber and Stoller. It's Pretend Gospel, Saved. And I'm going to give Laverne the last word on how to grow old ungracefully.
Thank you. And now for those who used to smoke and do all those things, this is for you, darling. I used to smoke, I used to drink, I used to smoke, drink, and dance a hoochie too. I used to smoke and drink, smoke and drink.
That was Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Laverne Baker with Saved, a song that was later covered by Elvis Presley, Brenda Lee, and The Band. Probably a few more as well. Just throw yourself into a YouTube vortex K-hole and you'll find all of the different covers. Thank you, Katie, for that fabulous talk.
Yeah, so smoke and drink and dance the hoochie coochie. Wait, the hoochie coo. Smoke and drink and dance the hoochie coo. That's it.
Yep.
Laverne Baker did all those things and more in style. So we also have video. YouTube yourself out, as Florian says, but we're going to pull some clips and audio for you. Laverne singing this song and others, including the very naughty Think Twice version X. And that'll be on our website for you, so you can see her in motion. And Katie's also put together a playlist, Laverne Baker Dead Lady Deluxe, over on Spotify. And that link will be in our social media and also at deadladyshow.com/podcast.
Ooh, I can't wait to click shuffle play on that one.
And we also have a Patreon.
We do, and we'd like to say thank you to some of our wonderful Patreon supporters who are helping us bring the world transcripts of the Dead Lady Show podcast. And you too can help us over at patreon.com/deadladyshowpodcast.
Little Lily Swing by Tritachyon is our delightful theme song, and you can find it on SoundCloud. The Dead Lady Show was founded by Florian Dowsens and Katie Derbyshire. The podcast is created, produced, and edited by me. Thanks to Florian and to Katie and to all of you out there, all of you, for joining us. I'm Susan Stone.
Thank you so much to the Dead Ladies Show for letting me use this episode. Please look them up on the platform or app of your choice. I also have big thank yous today to Linda, Cade, and Paula, who all signed up as Patreon supporters. If you would like to be as fabulous as Linda, Cade, and Paula, please head over to my website, herhalfofhistory.com, for various ways to support the show and keep it running for everyone. I have one, maybe two, more interim episodes lined up before Series 12 on Last Queens starts. Stay subscribed. Thanks.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.
This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
We want to tell you guys a little bit about our podcast. Tom and I met in college, became best friends, and then teachers almost 20 years ago. Sometimes school just does not allow us to elaborate on the topics that we find interesting, like the real shark attacks that inspired the movie Jaws, or the real historical context to Indiana Jones artifacts. Where does cereal come from? Or are zombies real? Does Ben Franklin really deserve to be on a $100 bill? On our podcast, just like in our class, there are no stupid questions.
Just two friends having a lighthearted conversation about history, pop culture, and the context of current events.
Listen to History Teachers Talking Podcast from Evergreen Network, anywhere you get your podcasts.